Hi everyone, this is Mary Elizabeth McCurry, the Magic Apothecary, here for you. In the background, you're listening to me doing the charge of the goddess. And by many other names.
Return.
Let my worship be in the heart that rejoices, for behold, all acts of love and pleasure are my rituals. Let there be beauty and strength, power, and compassion, honor, and humility, mirth, and reverence within you. And you who seek to know me, that the seeking and yearning will avail you not. For if that which you seek,
you find not within yourself, you will never find it without.
For behold, I have been with you from the beginning, and I am that which is achieved.
At the end of desire.
The end of desire. The charge of the goddess. I sped myself up a whole bunch to get that doing that sound a little different than I do. So there was that. So here I am podcasting. I have been quite busy preparing for a show in New York City. So if you're in New York City and you happen to have the night of October 26th after 9 o'clock free, and you want to go to Manhattan and see a show, which I am in, it's called The Lady in Black, Between the Sun and the Moon. I've been doing a series of sort of cabaret / one woman type shows, using music from time periods and reading from my diaries. So using the music from the times in my diaries that I'm reading about. So I started a year ago reading about things from my childhood, literally all the way up till I was divorcing my first husband, which was about 30-something years old, and using songs for different periods in my life, and relying a lot on the Standard American's songbook, the Great American Songbook, and singing standards like, You Go to My Head, I can't even think of it, You Don't Know What Love Is, or Cry Me a River, these kinds of songs. So I used those, tied those into my story, and then I sang about my life and use those because it reminds me quite a lot of my early life. And whenever I have in my life had a relationship, I almost always go back to the old songs. Anyway, so that was in October last year, and I've been working on a new show now, and have decided to open my diaries and my book of shadows from the 1990s. That's when I became a witch. That's when I first started to study witchcraft, Wicca, paganism, you name it. I mean, herbalism, aromatherapy, meditation, magic, of course, spellcraft. So that's back then in the 90s is when I was going through my divorce, and I had a young child, ended up on my own quite a lot as a single mother, and then found the goddess. Now, that's what I'm talking about today is the goddess, and that's why I started with the charge of the goddess. So anyway, if you want to do see my show, if you want to see my show, please do. That's what I meant to say. You can get tickets online at Brown Paper Tickets. You just type in Between the Sun and the Moon, October 26th. The show is at 9:30 at Pangea. It's a lovely little space in the East Village on East 12th Street and 2nd Avenue. And the tickets are $20 plus a two-drink minimum at the show. And it's a great show. We have a great, wonderful harpist. His name is Richard Spendio, who I met at an ICN a celebration for ISIS way back in a place that was doing such wonderful work about it, well, with ISIS, the Fellowship of ISIS. And he was playing, teaching about the harp, and he plays harps and he builds harps. And he's just a wonderful musical historian and player and just a lovely friend. So he'll be in that with me. And my friend from college, John Danello, who has been on things like The Deuce and other shows which have been on HBO and on network television, is also a rock and roll drummer. So he'll be with us. And I'm going to be working with somebody named Tracy Stark, who is an 11-time Manhattan Association of Cabarets winner. So as a pianist and as a musical director. So maybe some of you don't know what all that is, but what it is a live show where I'm getting up and reading my Book of Shadows, literally, and my diaries, and putting together, sewing together a story using music. Now, what I'm going to be singing, some of it is witchy, some of it is Lorena McKennett, and if you don't know who she is, LoreenaMc, capital KENNITT, Lorena McKennett. And she does a lot of work around the Celtic sounds, really working through really ancient Celtic and pagan sounds. That's what she does. She uses beautiful old instruments and harps, of course, and old drums, type drums and lutes, and also violins and cellos and rock drums and pianos. But anyway, it's a modernized kind of take on ancient Celtic stuff. So I'm singing two of her songs, and I'm not going to be able to use the breadth and power she has with all those wonderful musicians, but I do have great musicians, and we're going to really do, I think, a good job singing those songs. Plus, I'm singing a Wendy Rule song. Wendy Rule has several albums out. She just had a new one come out about Persephone, and she's an Australian artist singer who has done a lot of work, and I am singing a song of hers as well, which is very intense. A lot of her work is very intense, very wonderful, and very intense. She's a fantastic singer and a wonderful lyricist and musician. So if you haven't seen or heard her stuff, you should. Wendy Rule and Lorena McKennett. Plus, I'm going to be singing stuff from Phil Collins. I'm singing I Saw the Sign, which was a big hit in the 1990s, and we'd have definitely changed it, so it's not what it was on the radio. But we also are singing, you know, different kinds of songs, like In the Air Tonight by Peter Gabriel. I'm singing a Sting song called Sister Moon, and it's just a whole bunch of, like, fun songs, some stuff from, like, Dark Cabaret things, Girl Anachronism by this wonderful group which I adore, and whose name is not on the tip of my tongue, but it will come back. Anyway, there's tons of music, different kinds of stuff. It's an hour, maybe an hour and 15 long, and the food in this place is fantastic. I'm not certain, you know, it is. It just is. I've eaten there a couple times. I saw a friend of mine perform there on Christmas Day, and we had a wonderful dinner. So, and it's not too expensive, and the staff is nice, and it's really not even too hard to park down there. So, especially at that time. So have your dinner and come in for a late snack or dessert or whatever. I eat at that time of night, but a lot of people don't. I would have dinner at 9 o'clock. That's when I eat dinner. I work at night most of the time. I don't get out of working time until after 10, usually, or 9 or 10. Anyway, here we are talking about all that blah, 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 blah. I hope I didn't bore you, and that if you are caring, want to know more about it, you can look at my website. It's rev-mary.com. So there's that, and also you can find me on Facebook under my regular name, or if you wanted to write me or speak to me through Facebook, you look for me on the Magic Apothecary site. You look for the White Witch there, and on Twitter, and on also Spotify if you're listening to podcasts. I'm on Spotify as the White Witch which I am, not meaning my skin color, which is not white, sort of beige colored, but but meaning white magic, meaning healing and magic and good magic, not any kind of harmful magic. I don't try never to do harmful magic unless I have to defend myself. So that being said, I explain a lot of that information in my spellcraft stuff. If you don't see it here on Podbean or on Spotify or wherever you're getting your podcasts, just look for me on YouTube. Look for the Magic Apothecary there, and you will find a lot of videos about spellcraft and tarot. I did a whole series about the major arcana, which are the first group of cards in the tarot card deck, to teach about them, and I'm there with my blonde hair, which no longer exists, but there I am. So if you want to see those, you can. And if you have any questions about anything I do say or want to communicate with me about witchcraft or ideas or questions, I am always willing to, if you are nice and polite, I am willing to write back. So and hear your stories, which I adore, so many of them. So you can write to me at the magical, MAGICAL, apothecary, APOTHECARY, at gmail.com. Okay, can't find me by phone, don't bug me. You won't find me. Anyway, so the goddess. Now, the show that I'm doing, and the reason I brought it up, really, besides that I'm kind of hawking it, and I'm hoping people will come, I'm hoping that I get people to come and see this who are interested in paganism and want to hear a perspective and listen to music that tells you what it felt like when I first fell in love with the god and goddess and the idea of paganism and witchcraft and Wicca and whatever name you want to put on it at the moment. So what that was and how I got to the goddess is what I'm going to talk about today a little bit. I want to talk about how just really being lost at the time that this happened. I used to be Catholic, and I had a really deep relationship with the Virgin Mary because my name is Mary. But besides, a lot of Italian/Irish, which is what I am, people really revere the Virgin. And so I learned a lot about her first, and this became my sort of focus of God. I think I've said this to you guys before. When I went to this church where I grew up in Brooklyn, there was a huge mural where there was a ginormous portrait of the Virgin holding a baby, which was, of course, Jesus. And then at her feet were all these guys. So here I am thinking, this is God. It's the biggest thing in the picture, so it must be, right? But I was right. I was always right. She definitely is, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, so, and many of you. So that's the goddess, was the goddess. And as you grow up as a Catholic, you don't get to really experience or reach outside, especially when I grew up, because I'm not young. I'm a little on the edge of the top of Generation X. That'll tell you how old I am. But at that time in New York City, in my home and where I lived, and teachers, the whole influence around me was, you know, the straight and narrow. God was a guy and Jesus was a son. Don't know how he got that way. Came through nothing, through an angel. It flew into a woman from an angel, and somehow she puffed up and she was a virgin, you know. And we believe that stuff, and we're told to believe that stuff, and actually forced into believing that stuff, whether or not you did. But I didn't. And so I didn't like the idea that I couldn't be a priest. I thought this was wrong because I am a woman. I can't be a priest. What is that? I can't be the Pope. Why can't I be the Pope? I could be a Popess, the Popetess. I could, right? But no. So I left when I had my, what they call confirmation. You confirm that you are Christian, Catholic, and that you understand that the Holy Spirit is going to enter you, and you're going to walk forward with this little flame on your head. And the bishop sort of taps your face and pretends to hit you. This is the whole ceremony. I was told, and you take your name again, rebaptizing sort of as a soldier of God. I was told that my parents said, you don't have to go to church after this, but you have to go to church until this, and after this, you don't have to go. So I left. So I was 13, and I had no religion, but I did have my holidays. I didn't celebrate Christmas, and I still felt a really close relationship with Jesus, because I thought of him as my homie. He was my pal. I was not trained to believe he was some scary thing. I was brought up believing that he was my friend and that I could rely on, I can speak to him and he would be there for me. So I just sort of always saw him as like an older brother, you know, kind of cool guy. So I still had that relationship with him. And frankly, I think I still do in some way. I think he's just morphed into the God form. I feel the same way about that. So it must be. He's my Osiris. Yeah. Yeah. So the goddess, right? Wandering around the world, and I am not sure what I'm doing. I started to hook into sort of hippiness in high school and read things about reincarnation and astrology. I started really studying astrology early in life, and I also had been reading tarot cards really young, like from 13 or so, because my grandmother read them, and so did her mother, and so she taught me. Although my mother was not keen on it, I kind of kept it hidden. About 14, I stole my first thing. Not that I've stolen many things, but I do admit to stealing these tarot cards from a store that is now closed, and I can't send the money. It was a bad thing, a choice, and a wrong thing, actually, to do, and I am sorry for it. But I did it. But I did steal these cards, and I love them. There was the Rider Waite deck, and I read them and learned them and memorized them, and then my mother found them, and she believed, because of The Exorcist, that the devil could come through the cards, and though so she put them in the barbecue and burnt them up. That was my first deck of cards, that are my own cards. And then soon thereafter, I saved up enough money in a couple of years to go get my own deck of cards, right? So I went all the way to Manhattan to get them too, behind my parents' back. It was the only place I could get them was in Manhattan from Brooklyn. So there's that. And that was my whole extent, the extent of my spirituality was that kind of a thing. New age thinking, meditation, some yoga. I did have a foray into yoga very early in the 70s when it was brand new in America. I read some things. I actually read some things later on about Rajneesh. Osho, he's calling himself. No, they're calling him now so they can resell his books. This guru that a lot of people were passing around things about. And I read about Atlantis and Edgar Cayce and blah, blah, blah. So by the time I had reached this point in my life where I had become a mother and was fully in my 30s, I was sort of lost. My mother, her was not the best mother. She was kind of, she was ice cold and a little bit narcissist and a lot depressive. And my dad was a crazy sex addict, abusive lunatic, and grew up in a very dysfunctional, very, very dysfunctional home. So I had no mother image, really, or female image, although my mother was in my life. She was not in my life for more than just trying to get close to my son, who was her grandchild. So that, and then at this point in my life, I had been studying opera. I've been a singer since I'm like six. So at this point, I had seriously studied opera about this point, about maybe 10 years or maybe more. I've been performing in Manhattan and doing different things. And so this was a, but I knew I was really getting to the end of the idea of having an operatic career. I was getting too old for what they require. So I wasn't getting big. And so I was going to get out and start teaching. Anyway, so I was at a crossroads here and working in this place. Worked in veterinary hospitals because I've always loved and adored, really more than loved, really revered and respected animals. And so I was working in veterinary medicine as a practice manager. Long story, not telling you now. Nobody cares. So I'm there, and across the street from me was this place called Enchantments. Now, I've talked about this before, and as a matter of fact, if you look back in my podcast, you will see an interview with Lady Rhea, R-H-E-A, who was the co-owner of this place before I found it, but she co-owned it for many years, and she had some wonderful stories to talk about on the podcast. And, of course, I'm going to try to interview her the partner that she opened the store with. And I have also, if you look back, interviewed Joe Zukowski and Jezebel and Anat. And they had talked to me a lot about the trainings that they did there. And I was part of that training. So if you're interested in that kind of New York history and witchcraft, go ahead and listen. They were pretty fun. So I walked into the store after many, 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 many months of looking at it. I sat directly across from it in my office, and I was able to see these people come in at around noon or maybe later. And I had been at work since 8. Ugh. And there they come in these very goth clothing, black lipstick, lots of piercings, maybe green hair, leather head to toe, some of them smoking cigarettes and sort of wandering into the store. And they'd put out this large sign every day. And I would just sit there and go, I'm going in there. I had been to another store. It was called The Magical Child. This was a fantastic place. And I was in only for a short time and I got quite scared. But I stayed as long as I looked at every single thing in the room, in the whole store. It was on 13th Street between 5th and 6th, I think, 5th and 6th in Manhattan. And it was run by a man named Herman Slater, who is now become, he's become super famous in memoriam. A lot of people miss him. He died early in the AIDS epidemic. And also the people he passed his store onto did not take care of it, and so it sort of disappeared. He had a lot of weird things, like cool things, like, you know, raven feet or scales of, you know, lizards or snake things, or like bugs, pieces of bugs or bones or feathers, like stuff you go, what the fuck is that? And statues and really old, beautiful books and things like this. So, but that store closed, and it was not where I was. It had closed, and I had only gone in there once. I had been in Enchantments once just before I got married. Somebody had said I should have a special tarot card reading before my wedding, and it was years before this, and it had changed quite a lot. And I was like, well, I haven't been in as a person seeking. That's what I wanted to go in and do, to learn, to maybe study. So it got up the nerve one day, brought a couple of, you know, $20-something across the street, and shakily started looking around again, like I had done at the Magical Child, but examining everything from the huge bottles of herbs to the beautiful talisman hanging over the cash register, to, you know, books and pamphlets and magazines and you name it. I mean, the beautiful smell in there. I wrote about this in my performance piece, and it sort of smelled like the inside of a glorious spice cabinet mixed with tea, of herbal teas and tea and perfume and bodies. And there were these beautiful cats in there, these beautiful big black cats. They used to rescue some cats there, yeah, on and off. And these were beautiful, beautiful cats. So I went in. This woman asked me what I needed, and I had called a friend of mine and said, hey, what's a good book to read about witchcraft? She had actually worked in Enchantments at one point. And she said, oh, this book just came out by Starhawk called The Spiral Dance. I wrote it down fast and didn't remember what I was supposed to say when I got there, and I got terrified. And I said, it's by somebody named Hawk, and it's about dancing in circles. She said, oh, it's right behind you. It's called, she's Starhawk, and it's a spiral dance. But I was close, right? So I got that book, and I ate it up. I must have read the whole book within a day or two, maybe two. I sat and read and read and read and smoked many, many cigarettes, which I did at the time, unfortunately, but I sat and read and smoked and sat and read and smoked and went back again and again and again and again and again. And that was it. It sort of took. I think I had always been looking for it. I did like the pomp and circumstance of the Catholic Church. I did like candles. I did like the incense. I love the priests getting all dressed up in purple for Easter, or Lent, and white for Easter. I loved the change of the seasons there. I loved the ritual. I loved all of that, all of it. And I missed it. I didn't believe in that, what was behind it, but I loved the fucking ritual. Anyway, so I started studying with Joe Zukowski and Jezebel Anat in the backyard of Enchantments, and I stayed through a class there for 8 years, and then I went back. But this is what I wanted to talk about, the goddess. Let's talk about the goddess. That's my story. And I'm telling you the story about how I found her. It may seem rambling, but it's many, many years in the taking. It took me a very long time to understand what the goddess was. I understand what God was, and I could easily say, oh, okay, so you're saying Yahweh, the Hebrew God that is really my God too, if I'm Catholic, is a man. Okay, I get it. And he's somewhere in heaven, in the air. So when you say to me that there's air gods, I get it. When you say to me that there are sun gods, I get it. When you say to me, you know, Apollo is a sun god, I go, oh, okay, yeah, sure. Zeus is like, you know, Jupiter. He's up in charge and he's in the sky. He's got a big white beard. Oh, yeah, I know that guy. That's God. So, yeah, I can get that. When you say to me, okay, there's a horned god who looks sort of like he's got antlers and furry legs and he sort of like runs through forests, you know, like Pan, but he's, you know, more like a deer than a goat, and Pan's like a goat. I'm like, oh, yeah, nature spirits. Yeah, we know those. I learned those in school. I read Midsummer Night's Dream. I get it. It's like fairy things or like that. I get it. I totally get it. Oh, okay. So when they said to me, there's a green man, you know, a growing green man, I'm like, and he's like Peter Pan. I'm like, oh, or Robin Hood. I'm like, I know him already. You know, we know him. We know all the god forms, I think is quite interesting. It was interesting for me. So I got it right away. There was a book in this course I had to read called The Witch's God and the Witch's Goddess by Stuart and Janet Farrar, F-A-R-R-A-R. They wrote also The Witch's Bible and many other books. You should take a look. There are plenty of new books, and I love them, but there are also a lot of good old books that you need to dust off and take a look at. That one is wonderful if you're interested in traditional British Wicca. If you're interested in that work or anything associated with that type of work, go look that book up, The Witch's Bible. And you can read, and you should read The Witch's God and The Witch's Goddess, because they go into great detail about gods and goddesses all over the world. Now, when I got my hands on these books, and The Witch's Bible, and The Gospel of Aradia, I was like, what the hell? I'm roasting. You know, I was sure I was going to hell, and I was the enemy. That did not happen, but I thought so. And reading these books was quite exciting, because it was like, you know, opening a box I had never seen the contents of. It was quite thrilling. So I read both books, and I, you know, read the goddess book, and I'm like, it's not sinking in. And then there's a book that I was supposed to read and did called When God Was a Woman by Merlin Stone, another good old book. Not perfect, but great, fun to read, and there is a lot of good information in that, and it's very, I'd say, inspiring to women. At least it was to me and my friends in this class. It still is. So I read this book and I still didn't get it. So I said to Joe, he worked in the store, this enchantment store too. So I went in one day after work, of course, and I said, I'm kind of screwed. I don't know what to do because I don't know who the goddess is. I don't get it. So he started handing me books like, this is her, you see, she's this and she's this and she's this, and I'm like, no, you see, when I grew up there was like a god in the sky and he had a son and these were perfect, you know, like this set down, this is Jesus, this is God, this is what they look like, this is what you do to talk to them, this is how you do this. There's no such thing for the goddess, so I don't understand her. He thought I was nuts. He handed me more books. He did try to speak to me. He understood what it was. But because I had like this hole in my head where it was so empty, there was no information. It was like having a big bag in your brain that had nothing in it. It had to be filled, you know, so it had to be filled to the top. And at this point, I had nothing in there but a crumb. I had no idea what this was. I knew ideas of angels. I got the idea of the Virgin and her sister, or her mom, excuse me, and her cousin. And, you know, and there were a lot of female saints, so those were around a lot. I mean, we were pretty Catholic, as you can tell. But, you know, I didn't even learn that much. I knew who Zeus was, but don't ask me who Aphrodite is at that time. Now I can tell you, you know, goddess of love, the Greek goddess of love and attention and beauty and power of the power of beauty and more than that. So I kept looking and I couldn't find it and I gave up. I said, okay, I'm just going to go through this. And it came initiated and I accepted the goddess as who I thought she was and went on with my business and started doing magic and meditation. And I finished these classes and I kept reading, and my friend Margaret and I kept reading and reading and reading. We'd go to Barnes & Noble and buy every fucking book in there and just pass it between each, you know, we'd split them and share them, and somebody would keep one and somebody would keep the other. It was pretty cool. We kept our education going after classes, and we formed a group for ourselves with a friend of ours named Robert, and we, the three of us called, I can't remember the name, the Calico Coven, some weird name. We were just learning still, basically. Each one of us would take 4 months of the year and do all the Sabbats and Moons, full and new, during that time in our house. And so we'd have to come up with all these rituals, you know, for 4 months of the year. And that was a lot of work, and it was cool and fun. We loved it, and we learned so much in 2 years. We did it for about 2 years. Even during that time, calling, you know, invoking the goddess, working with the words, trying to understand it. Didn't truly get it yet. Went on about my business, joined another group, started studying deep magic. This was a darker group. We studied Roman magic and Greek magic, both light and dark magic. We did cursed tablets and blood magic and all kinds of things. So I learned very deep, very powerful, ancient magic. I'm happy to know so, you know. In this group, I learned a lot about Aleister Crowley, which is someone you should look up if you're really interested in this whole thing and how it came to be here at this moment in your ear for my voice, because he was one of the people who started the whole ball rolling. So look him up, at least understand who Uncle Ali is. Anyway, so yeah, I go into this group, and this group was different. I had learned a lot of things, and I think one of the things that was happening was I'm reading sort of generic books, and I didn't have my own path. And during the time I was in this class, I started to really not rely so much on intellect, but much more on my body and guts, and really was calling up things in Italian. And this brought up a lot of my Italian blood, I feel, and I felt very connected to many things more than I ever had before. We weren't doing any harm. We didn't harm anybody, but we were learning very serious things. And very deep chanting and very deep meditation. So I had an initiation into this coven. It was going to be a coven on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And I had an initiation on Imolc, which is January 31st, during a full moon. How cool is this, right? And it was both terrifying and exhilarating. I had fasted for 48 hours before. I was very hungry, very tired. It was very cold. And we were put into, I was put into a sort of a bathroom which was ice cold in the back of a store, and stripped naked and et cetera, et cetera. The usual, if you have had any experience with anything about initiation, or you've read anything about Wiccan initiation or pagan initiation, you're almost always naked, you know. You're always going to come in, somebody's got horns or some kind of hat or something. When you come in, they're all naked. This is always kind of the way, almost always the way. Some people do it with clothes on, okay, but in my experience, it's been a lot of weird-looking naked people. But it's been cool and fun, and I love them all, bumps, bruises, and all, and other things. So anyway, so, yeah, so I do this initiation, and something happened. They say it takes sometimes, you know? The first initiation I had, and I did with my friends and our group, was light and beautiful. And we did it on Yule, and it was as students would do. It was more of a dedication than an initiation, I'd say that for sure. But this one was serious. It was a long study, and it was a very difficult study. I had some death at the time in my family, and in my home, one of my cats was suffering and dying. So I had been in a dark spot. And so when the goddess, who shall remain nameless because I will not expose her, or my initiatory ideas or thoughts or visions of who it was, it held me. This is the first time I felt anything like that. I felt like I fell backwards as I was being, you know, pricked and written, blood, whatever. And all these things were going on and chanting was going on. I felt like I laid back on a lap, like a woman bigger than me, surrounded me, circled me, took me in. And I felt like I sunk into her. It wasn't like I was standing on her, next to her. She wasn't inside of me. I fell into her deeply. And she said, "Welcome, my daughter. Welcome, my daughter." Now, I said at the beginning of this thing, you know, I had some troubles with my mom. She was not the nicest of moms. So you think, well, maybe. Maybe indeed that's me. Probably. That's me needing that. That's me wanting that. That's me wanting a mother. Or a sister, or a grandmother, or all of that, or a daughter, maiden, the mother, the crone, the queen, all these archetypes. Looking for that powerful feminine force inside of myself. And there I thought I found it. And I did, because things started to go really weird. Magic worked. It didn't sort of work. It worked so strongly that it was frightening. It was like throwing beams around. And by the way, it's never changed. because once you're in, once you're accepted by the goddess in that way, she is now you. You are she, and you are one, and what you desire, or what you can concentrate on desiring, that's a whole nother story, what you can get your mind clear and focused upon, really focused upon, can happen. It can happen without a deity's pulling you in like this, too. You may already have this connection. I didn't. I was just dealing with the sky god and totally confused. Really. So, this happened, and my whole everything changed. I became quite dedicated. Now, this coven did not work out. People did not stick around. It actually disintegrated very badly, very quickly. But I took this with me, and I kept going, and I kept reading. And I knew now where I was. I'm going to tell this story in my show, and I'll tell it here. This one time, probably, I don't know when it was, probably 96, 97, something like this, I went to a new witchcraft store. Somebody told me there was a witchcraft store up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it. So finally, I did one day. I had gone in specifically to Manhattan to find this place, and I found it, because it wasn't in a store. You had to go down some stairs, a metal shiny kind of, you know, staircase, outdoor staircase to a courtyard. And in the courtyard, there was this store. And it was a snowy day. It was like probably late November. So go in to this beautiful store, which is circular, which is like fantastic. As we know, witches do circle up. The moon is a circle. The life is a circle. The circle of life, like from Lion King, yes, that is pagan thought, is a circle, and there's a roaring fire in a white mantle. Beautiful. And the smell in there was amazing. There was this woman there with a long grayish dress on, and very long, very loose, very shiny blonde hair. So she was, and she was little and kind of light looking bird like. And so I was looking around, and I can't afford anything in this place, right? So I really can't afford anything in this place, but I want everything in this place. She had perfumes and beautiful bottles and incense and gorgeous containers and it was books that I was just so expensive, but just so beautiful. But it was the Upper West Side. So anyway, so I couldn't afford anything except like this tiniest little bag of incense, and I took it and said I would like to buy this. And so I think it was like, I don't know, $10. I buy this $10 thing, and I go to leave, and I'm like feeling very weird, and I'm attributing it to the fact that I smelled everything in the place, and then there were these herbs in the fireplace. So I go up the stairs, and I fell like face first and slid all the way down these stairs, and I got hurt, not knocked out, but hurt, and my wallet flew out of my hands, all my money. Well, the $5 I probably had, all my money, my ID, everything was strewn around this courtyard. She came out, and she's like, oh my God, you poor woman. She helped me up. She got my stuff, and we put it back into my wallet. And I was super dazed, and super embarrassed. So I left. I got in the train. I get to the train. I get in my train. At one point, the train I used to take to Astoria used to go overground, and there's a higher area. And so I was sleepy and confused by and hurt. I had really bruised myself. So I'm sitting in this train. No, it did not knock myself out. I was telling you it did not. I look up, and the sky is, the clouds are parting. And that's nice. You know, it's becoming a sunny day. I know I have to go get my son soon. It's almost 3:00. Okay, cool. And I see again something that looks like an eye in the sky, in the parting of the clouds. I'm like, what? Is that clouds? No. The clouds sort of look different now. Then they look real, and they look real. Now it looks like a left eye. Now this is something I've been drawing my whole life, and so, yes, if I did get knocked out, here's the science, so I did get knocked out, even for a moment, I could have jostled my brain enough to remember something I know. But I don't think that's what happened, because I didn't get knocked out. Because I think she would have called the cops or an ambulance, and she didn't, and I was fine. So there was this eye. Now I think, okay, now you've gone fucking crazy. There's no eye in the sky. There's nothing there. And I hear in my head really loud, my daughter. It's me, don't be afraid. I was just looking at you just so you know that I'm here. I am always here. I am here. So that day I knew what the goddess was. At least for me. There she was, besides my initiation, where I sunk into the softness of the earth. There she was, looking down at me, like a mother would. And for the first time in my life, I felt like somebody's daughter, like I mattered as a daughter, that I had something special to do, that I have something special to give. Not the way my actual family made me feel, but like how the goddess makes me feel. And I never looked back. I haven't been in many groups since that time, mostly not. It's hard to keep together. You know, people are busy. It's really tricky to do that when there's no specific place you go to, and things are very eclectic and they change quite often. And I do like working solitary. I really, really do. Not better, I just do like it. But that was the story. I'm glad I got it out of my mouth. I think what I'm supposed to do is this. I've been saying this quite often, and it's to do this, to teach this. I came to this experience of the goddess, the god, Wicca, witchcraft, very late in my life as far as things go. I was already in my 30s. So I had to redo my whole life, by the way. My parents and my siblings, one of which still doesn't speak to me. They were talking about 1996 or 7. He has still not spoken to me since then because I did this. My parents never forgave me for this. On my mother's deathbed, she's telling people to watch the witch. Be careful, the witch, what do we do about the witch? I hope she's watching, because really, what an idiot. Anyway, the witch. So, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to stand here and look normal, because I don't exactly look normal. I mean, I have tattoos and, you know, and they're all pagan. But for the most part, I'm a kind of normal, you know, woman living in New York City and going about my business, and I'm a performer, yes. And this, by the way, this show is a big deal, because not that it's a big deal with money, which I wish it was, goddess please send, but it is a big deal to me, and it's hard for me to do. I've come out of the broom closet, obviously. I use my real name here. I'm not Lady, you know, hoo-ha, I'm me. But to stand up in front of an audience and say these things and have critics write about it, and there's been articles written about it, so my name is now indelibly attached to witchcraft, and okay, let's hope that, you know, Handmaid's Tale doesn't come true and I don't get hung by my feet. Whatever. And if I do, the goddesses will anyway. So, you know, that's the story, and I'm ready to give the world a story. I really want to write a book about this, but I'd rather talk, and that's why I'm glad to do this here. I'm glad I can give this story to you, and I hope you enjoyed it. I don't know if it was... was a good story. I hope it was a good story. I love the story myself, but, you know, trying to show people this is the inside of this is what a witch is. This is what I'm trying to get across here. What the heck is a witch? Well, this is what it is. I'm a human being that's had a spiritual experience. That said, I wanted to talk a little bit about witchcraft and the political attachment to it. I read a lot of different articles as often as I can get my hands on them, and that's a lot, because there's magazines out there like Raise the Horns, and There's a magazine out there, there's a website out there called Medium, and there are many, many pagan articles in there, and they publish them almost every single day. And then there's Pathos, which is this tremendous, you know, religious website that does have a lot of stuff up about witchcraft and Wicca and paganism and on and on. But yeah, so I've been reading a lot, and I keep coming across witch as the feminist, and I found this wonderful poem read out loud by this woman from England. Now, her name is not in my mouth, I am sorry, but I can look her up, and I can put her in the, you know, in the descriptions, on at least on Podbean. But anyway, it was about being a witch and what a witch is and how we're tired of being taken advantage of. It really was more, I'm a feminist, I'm a woman and proud to be a woman, but using the word witch instead of the word woman, which I thought was very interesting, because why not use the word woman? She used the word witch off again and again and again. And a lot of women are using the word witch to mean powerful, to mean feminist, to mean don't fuck with me, to mean don't you me too me. because I'm going to get you if you do. And trying to reclaim power. Now, historically, when people don't feel like they have power, and the very people that feel that they are the most powerless because they don't have a lot of money or capital are the very people that rely upon witchcraft quite a lot. So I think, my opinion, is that myself as well, I admit fully that I was looking for a power source, that I was looking for the goddess within myself and the god within myself, yin and yang, both inside, fully developed. I think that a lot of people are looking for their power. That's what they're doing. They feel powerless, and women entirely, we really do feel powerless, especially, I don't know about anywhere else, but I know, because I know people listen to this in England, Canada, and parts of Europe, and I really appreciate it. Hi, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And I guess it's the same there too. I guess it's the same everywhere on this planet at the moment. If we do study astrology, if we know anything about astrology, there are a lot of things going on right now that are causing this stress, you know, in our world, and hopefully we get through it. Let's hope we all survive and do better on the other side of this insanity. But I guess that's what it is. I think the goddess is risen. That's what I think. And I think she may be some outside force that people want to believe in, or she may be within us. And I think she's within us. And I think we're starting to realize that. And I think that we're starting to yell out loud that it's true. That we are goddess incarnate. And we are God incarnate. And all men are goddess incarnate and God incarnate. We are divinity walking around in a meat suit, as my astrological mentor Rick Levine likes to say. Meat sack incarnate. That's what he says we are. But he's kind of right. Anyway, so that's that. I also wanted to talk a little bit, tiny bit about the, I was at Pagan Pride in New York City last Saturday. And I got there a little bit late. It was very warm in New York last week. It was in the 90s. It was tricky getting anywhere, and people were slow. So I got there, but I got there at like, it was like halfway over. But it was so small. When I got there, all the booths were still there. And the people were still there in the booths selling things like, you know, rings and amulets and a sage. Lots of sage. Whatever. And women walking around, you know, just a few people walking around, moseying around from place to place. Nobody's dancing. There's no music on. And there was only a small bunch of booths. Now, I've missed a couple of Pagan Prides because I have been doing other things like performing. So I don't always get a chance to go to these things when they do them once, you know, it's tricky. So this time I vended at a Pagan Pride a couple times, and so I expected this to be like that, but it wasn't. It was, nobody was there, or very few people were there. And there was a ritual at the end, which wasn't really a ritual, which is sort of dancing and making noise, and it wasn't really supposed to be something, but it didn't end up being something because a lot of people wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't come and take their pride. They wouldn't come and call the goddess. They wouldn't come over and do a spiral dance. I was there yelling, but like a lot of people just looked like, no, a lot of people came dressed in 95 degree weather in leather from head to toe, pierced faces and tattooed necks. And okay, that's cool. I think it's gorgeous, but that does not make you a witch. They just sat there and stared. And that's what they did. Looking menacing. People have this idea of what a witch is. Now, a witch is a lot of things. A witch is every woman or man can be a different witch than the other next to them. So I can't tell you what that is, but I can say that it's not a fashion statement. That drives me crazy. It is not a fashion statement. You don't dress in leather and say, okay, now I'm in leather, so I'm a witch. Well, you might be. Also might be a dominatrix. I don't know. Or you might be really stupid in the heat in New York City wearing head to toe leather and, you know, green hair and looking menacing at people. I think that these people really do live in a TV world, just like our president in America does. Everybody's on television in their own minds. It's not witchcraft. It's pretty. Could be witchcraft if you use it for something. If you're empowering that leather from head to toe with some kind of protective shield, cool. If you're empowering that to be a sex A magnet? Cool. But what are you doing otherwise? Why are you here like this? I want to go ask these questions and I never do it. I should. No, I shouldn't. I was like the most normal person there. And where I live, I'm not the most normal person. My tattoos are quite apparent and, you know, whatever. Whatever I am, people see it. But I was like the most normal looking person. And I wonder if that's okay or not okay. I don't know what I think about it. I wonder what you think about it. Is it okay to be out there and dress like, you know, Catwoman and saying that's witchcraft? Or is it okay to just be like Grandma Witch? Or is it, I think it's okay to be both, but I just would rather it be authentic on either side. Just authentic. Real. Nobody wants to learn. I talk to people about this, and maybe you are too sleeping by now, because people go to sleep and they go, I don't want to know any of this. Can I make a spell? Yeah, go ahead, see what happens. Everything will fall apart in your life, and then you'll have to find somebody like me to fix it for you. And I won't. Again, black lipstick, green hair, don't make a witch. It looks nice. It's a lot of fun. It's very cool and goth and retro, but it ain't a witch. That's all I gotta say. If you want to be a witch, you have to study. If you want to be a stregaria, you have to study. If you want to be work with Vudan or Santeria, or you name the path, Native American, if you're Native American, if you do that work, you know how deep that is. South American shamanism, very deep paths. I mean, these things are lifelong studies. Even, you know, devout Catholics take all of their life to find the parts of it that they really can use for spiritual development, as do, say, Hasidic Jews or Buddhists or Tibetan monks. So anyway, those are my 5 cents. I hope you enjoyed my charge of the goddess. I do hope if you're in New York City that you can come down, you will come down. And if you do come down and you heard it here, I'll love to say hi afterwards. I always do hang out a bit and say hi. And if you like information about any of my singing stuff, just let me know. Write to me at themagicalapothecary@gmail.com, themagicalapothecary. And also, I have an Etsy store up. It's called The White Witch and The Magic Apothecary. And there you can get spells made for you specifically. And that's what I do. I make spells for people to empower themselves. I do not empower them. I do not send magic in the mail. I send the equipment made with astrological coordination and moon coordination and timing of the hour, planetary hour coordination on my altar and left there during whatever phase of the moon is the best for your working. That is how I do this. And I make it from scratch, each single one. So it takes me a couple of weeks sometimes or more because I have to make sure I'm working with the right planets and the right motion of the moon, either it's waxing or waning, for your working. So, and then I teach you how to use it. And they work, I promise. People come back for years. So take a look for me there on Etsy. I am The White Witch and Magic Apothecary. If you can't find it for whatever reason, snap me a note and I will write you back. You can also find me on Twitter under The Magic Apothecary and on Instagram as The Magic Apothecary. So I'm all around and you can certainly find me if you need information. And sometimes I do put up pictures of my goods, sometimes my soaps when they're real pretty. And so there's that. Okay, so just saying, have a wonderful beginning of October. This is October 2019 that I'm yammering on about. And way before Samhain, well, coming along. It's October 7th when I'm recording. And Samhain is coming along. And I certainly would love to make another podcast before Samhain. I will certainly try to sit here. But I will do my best with this lovely witchy show that I'm really working on. I will talk about it when it's done too, for sure. So I can tell you how it went if you didn't get to come and see it, and I can explain what might have happened in the room and exactly how the goddess sang through me as her channel. And that is how I see that. Okay, I wish you bright blessings and may all be well with you. May you be safe, happy, and healthy, and may everything you desire come to be true. Many blessings, my friends. I hope you have a wonderful day. Love and light.